coming up next on Lutheran Radio UK.
Worth doing badly.
Welcome back to Worth Doing Badly with me, Jamie Krieger, and David Weber. On this week's episode, we will be considering the readings for the fifth Sunday of the Epiphany, which is what we celebrate this coming Sunday. And the readings are Isaiah 40, verses 21 through 31. The Psalm is 147, verses 1 through 11. The Epistle reading is 1 Corinthians 9, verses 16 through 27. And the Gospel lesson is from Mark chapter 1, verses 29 through 39. And here with me is David Weber. David, welcome back.
Good to hear from you, Jamie. Another week at us, fifth Sunday, and we're in Mark. And Mark records that after the calling of the disciples, Jesus was taken back to one of the disciples' home, and there a woman had a fever that Jesus healed. And Mark records that the moment the fever left her, she ministered or served them. And that transition strikes me as an interesting insight into the nature of why Jesus heals, even though the healing is never permanent. You see, the text presumes that all of us recognize that there is something in our lives that we desire healing. Healing is the metaphor for fixing all that we see that's wrong in our lives, and that's what Jesus comes to. The promise of Jesus is that these temporary, impermanent healings are a foretaste of the cosmic healing that he would effect by his death and resurrection. And the healings there are there to show us that what we really desire is not just a healing for a shorter period of time that eventually ends in death, but our deepest desire is for a permanent healing that lasts forever. And so Jesus eventually downplays the specific healings of body and soul, and is there to proclaim that promise of a healing that will happen when time comes to an end. But in the meantime, and in this time before the end time, Jesus's purpose is to give us foretastes. And the purpose of this life is not to make us satisfied. The purpose of these healings is to give us that foretaste that makes us even more hungry to receive the fullness of his kingdom and not just the foretaste. Now, interestingly, Jesus obviously would heal both body and soul, and there were those oppressed by demons, and Jesus cast out the demons, and interestingly, Mark records that he refused to let the demons speak. He silenced them because their demonic dirty work had already successfully incited a longing for healing. That their demonic dirty work had brought the oppressed to Jesus. And so they had nothing truthful or useful to add. They could only complicate and ruin the purpose that Jesus had for them, and that purpose was that the healings gave the disabled a temporary taste of the promise that would be fulfilled at the end of time. But in the meantime, we and they were energized by this promise that somehow healing would take place. Now, back to this observation, that the woman who was healed, who received service from Jesus, immediately turned to serve them. The moment the fevered woman was healed, she began to serve. And there's something, there's an insight in there. It's almost as if she recognized at the very moment she was healed, that the tyrannical will to be served, and that runs throughout every culture and every person, that the tyrannical culture to be served is as pathological as wishing to be disabled. Of course, the people who need service are the disabled, but those who insist on being served, in a sense, are desiring, strangely as it may sound, to be disabled. When she was disabled, she participated in the promise of Christ by letting others serve her. But now enabled, she recognized that Jesus' healing had freed her to participate in the promise, not by receiving service, but by serving others and giving others this foretaste of the promise fulfillment. So immediately she sees that this promise has a double edge to it of being served and serving. And obviously she would much rather be on the serving end. And what is it that people really long for? Psalm 147 makes it very clear. In this world, we long for God's kindness. That's the purpose of life. As I said earlier, the purpose of life is not to make us content. The purpose of life is to be continually hungry for the absolute fulfillment of everything that God has promised. That means it doesn't dismiss life or reduce life. It actually sees the present life as an elevated experience of foretastes, of whiffs, of getting hunger for eternal life. This doesn't reduce the importance of this life. It actually lifts it out of despair and gives it a purpose. So the psalm says, who longs for God's kindness and answered it? They are the scattered and the brokenhearted. The ones who bear painful wounds. What they really desire is not temporary healing, even though many people can come to think that. What they really desire is God's kindness, which is a sort of strange way to look at things, and it would be hard to get that across, that when we are brokenhearted or when we are physically wounded, that what we want is not just the healing of that particular malady. The wounds, whether they're caused by our weakness or our wickedness, are important to us. That's a strange thing again to say, that our weaknesses and our wickedness are personally important, because they are the things that reveal to us that we really don't desire the might of the horse, says the psalm, but rather our real desire, what we really long for, is the eternal God who is the Lord, creator of the ends of the earth. And in a sense, the psalm says we need unhappiness. We need to receive our moments of unhappiness almost with a sense of gratitude, because these are the things that make us long for God's kindness. Hard to look at life, hard to look at these things in that sort of way, which is why the psalm makes it, helps us see what would it be like to pray the truth of the gospel. Now, Isaiah takes this just slightly in a different direction, and when he asks, do you not know? Have you not heard? Now, that phrase is said at the beginning and at the end of this text. And in the middle, Isaiah recognized that living in creation is confusing. Being a person on earth, we flourish, we wither, and then we wonder, what is the point of existence? Especially when we recognize that existence ends by the triumph of the withering. To this, Isaiah asks, do you not know? Have you not heard? Was it not told to you how the earth was founded? You see, Isaiah doesn't say to those who are hard-pressed, everything will get better. Isaiah says, keep in mind that the only reason that things seem bad is that in the beginning they were better. And in the beginning, that set our expectations for what we think life ought to be like. So the meaning of life turns out to come to an understanding that the earth was founded by the Word of God. Now, this truth is expressed in the liturgy where we say probably too quickly and without thought, as it was in the beginning, is now, and ever shall be. So in other words, our hope for the perfect healing is not about what's going to take place in the future. It is first grounded in what took place in the past, that in the past there was a perfection and in the beginning. And that perfection is the promise of the return of perfection in the end. And now that we are stuck in this middle and with all of these imperfections, but yet the Isaiah is making it clear we are surrounded by it behind us and before us. We are surrounded by this perfection. This is why we desire a perfection. And our withering makes us wonder, but it also is the one thing that will reveal to us why it is that in the beginning that perfection was so crucial. And what we need to know when we're in this middle is that we are on track to the ever shall be. So the is now of that liturgical formula is that the is now is not defined by our illnesses, our weaknesses and our wickedness. The is now is defined by what first came before and what shall be. And that's why that formulation is one of the most beautiful expressions of hope. And then so that we don't miss the point of the meaning of life is not in this life. The meaning of this life is just to keep us hungry for the full fulfillment of God's promises. Isaiah ends as he began. Do you not know? Have you not heard? An eternal God is the Lord, the creator of the ends of the earth. And the emphasis is on eternal. This is what we were made for, not a healing that somehow is temporary. Paul brings us back to the original point in the gospel about the living out the meaning of life by either being served or by serving others. And Paul is talking about a strange sort of bondage that he has that liberated him to serve others. Paul does not talk about his life of unselfishness. Paul is not somehow resentful of all the things demanded of him. Paul is actually expressing the fact that being liberated from his narrow selfishness in order to serve others is a real liberation. See, serving others, and oftentimes those people we know who see themselves as serving others are very, very sad people. They're forever complaining about how much they do for others. That is not Paul. Paul sees that real service is a spontaneous sense of gratitude, like the woman who was healed, who immediately recognized that rather than being served, she was allowed to serve. For Paul, he was liberated by the gospel, which unleashed his intellectual creativity to find vast and varied human connections to all. So he makes it clear. To the Jews, he became Jewish. To the guilt-ridden, he lived as if he too were under the demands of the law, even though he says, not being under the law myself. To those who imagine that they were free from the law, Paul revealed to them that they really did not desire to live without the law. What they really desired was to be liberated from the condemnation of the law by Christ. Now, just that little bit of insight would take a whole lot of creativity to talk to that different group of people. And in fact, when that group of people that Paul mentions talk to each other, they want to kill each other and destroy each other. They see each other as the enemy. But Paul somehow was liberated by the gospel to go into each of those tribes and camps and teams and somehow to find ways and connections to creatively enter and converse. See, that's what Paul sees his service is. He recognizes that with enough patience, with enough creativity, he can converse with any and every person, and he can bring hope to any culture or any circumstance. Paul is not filled with pride. He's filled with a sense of joy that the gospel has liberated him, which allowed him to enter into these various places and to speak to those who had not known and to those who had not heard that the eternal God is the Lord and he is the creator of the ends of the earth. And not only that, then you add that the creator had come to earth and salvation was now possible. Paul was almost tipsy with this idea that somehow the gospel made a connection to every human being, and somehow, if you are creative and patient enough, you can find a way into the conversation that leads to salvation. I think Paul would find our modern trend to limit oneself to their particular tribe or their political team. I think he would see that as a denial of the gospel, because the gospel has designs to save all people everywhere and for all time. That's what Paul thought was the service that liberated.
Thank you once again, David. This is as much as we can do today. I pray this has been very useful to our listeners. Just reminding our listeners that the podcasts of this program, Worth Doing Badly, are available online on our website, lutheranradio.co.uk. Try our app for mobile phones. Go to the App Store or Google Play and download the one that is right for you to listen to us on the go. David, once again, thank you very much. We'll talk again next week.
Thank you.